It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's August 15th and 16th, depending on when you're listening to this. If you're listening to this on Saturday, it airs at 9:05, and if you're listening to this on Sunday, it airs at 7:05. I just want to thank my prior week's show guest, Dr. Joe Arante, who works with me here at Northeast Delta Dental, and he's our Vice President of Provider Network and Clinical Strategies. And Joe did a great job explaining to the listening audience what one might expect when you go to the dentist now in sort of a COVID world that we live in. I will say, as an editorial comment, that I recently visited a dentist, and it was, to me, safer and more efficient than ever. Had a wonderful experience, and I think I'm not atypical because based on our claim statistics, we're probably close to 98-99% of the claim volume prior to where we were with the COVID. So people are flocking back to the dentist, and that appears to be the case nationally. Even in hot spots like Florida and Texas and California, people are still going to the dentist. So if you're out there listening to the show today in mid-August, yes, it's very safe to go back to the dentist. The week before that, we had Dr. Richard Berryman on talking about the history of dental schools and how dental schools came into being, and how over the years there's better and better understanding that the mouth needs to be part of the body, and you can't have good overall health without good dental health. But this weekend with me is Jeff Rapsis, who's the executive director of the Aviation Museum of New Hampshire. Jeff, thank you for joining me this weekend. It's been kind of a hot and humid summer, so I appreciate the time you're going to give me today to explain a little bit more about the Aviation Museum of New Hampshire, particularly as we've kind of segued into a virtual world. Thank you, Jeff, for joining me.
Well, thank you very much for the chance to talk a little bit about what we do here, and thank you for all the visibility you give to so many great organizations through this program.
Oh, thanks. And, of course, I've had other people talk about the Aviation Museum in the past, and it was very entertaining and informative. But let's start, Jeff. You have a long and storied career in New Hampshire, so in media. Everybody knows you through the media, of course, the Hippo and everything else. So, but I always find when I get when I talk to people who listen to our show, boy, I love the background of people. So, tell us about your 35-year career in publishing, and I always find it interesting how you've wound your way here. So, tell us and take your time. Tell us about that history.
Thank you. Well, I'm a New Hampshire native. I went away to school, but came back to start working in the newspaper business back when there really was a newspaper business.
That's true. You know,
it's changed so much in our lifetimes, of course. And so for 30-plus years, I was either at the Nashua Telegraph or the Union Leader or the Keene Sentinel. I pretty much wore out my welcome at every daily newspaper in the state.
Just the opposite. You're probably recruited.
Well, it got to a point where two partners and myself decided we would put together our own newspaper. It turned into the Hippo, which is the weekly newspaper based in Manchester that is available through most of the state's southern tier. And it's turned out to be a really successful venture. After 20 years, we're the largest print-based publication in the state. And it's continued to be pretty healthy, even as times have changed. We've sort of come up with a sort of a print model that works in the Internet age, in that it's about what's going on each week. It's arts and entertainment, it's culture, it's lifestyle, and it's uniquely southern New Hampshire, and I think we've been able to carve a place in the market for us with it.
Yeah, no, it's terrific. It's a great piece. And also, I'm told through the grapevine that you moonlight as a silent film expert. So tell us what that's all about. I actually never knew that, so I'm going to be really intrigued to hear about this.
Well, it is. It's sort of a very different thing, but I guess that's why I do it. I studied music very closely a long time ago, and I didn't pursue it as a career. As I've said, I went into journalism and worked with words rather than music, but I've always I played keyboard and some other things and wanted to do music. And about 20 years ago or so, I wound up writing music for a film by a New Hampshire film director, Bill Milios, called Dangerous Crosswinds. And Bill knew me for the music that I was doing, and I got a chance to do music with him. And it was a really rewarding experience. And I wanted to do more of that, but New Hampshire is not exactly Hollywood, and there weren't film directors throwing themselves, you know, at me saying, please write music for my movie. I had always enjoyed older cinema, even going back to when movies did not have soundtracks and there was no dialogue. You know, people call them the silent films. And for the first 30 years of cinema, that was what people saw when they went to the movies. And it was a tremendously entertaining form of entertainment if you put it all back together the way it was intended to be shown. It was never meant to be shown on TV on a little screen with rinky-tink piano music. You know, it was a real big experience, and it's what caused people to first fall in love with the music, with the movies. And music was a big part of it. So I have got myself into the field of creating live music for silent film presentations around New England, but also all around the country. I've been fortunate enough to travel all over to different places, museums and festivals where they do these. Even had a couple of times gone over to London to do it over there. So it's turned into this whole second career that it helps my business. The art that I do kind of helps the business part of my life, and the business that I have kind of helps the art. So it's something that I like to do and I enjoy doing, and people seem to like it as well. So it's rewarding. One other thing I do is that I have yet to beat Tom Raffio in any road race anywhere in the state of New Hampshire.
I think you could now. I'm running slower than ever, but I've celebrated my one. Well, actually, towards the end of last year or November, I did my 1,000th officially timed, documented road race, because I was for the last few years averaging 100, and when I first started getting into it, 50. But all of a sudden, when I and I'm proud to tell my age, when I turn 60, all of a sudden, like, I feel like Fred Flintstone, like my legs are moving, but I look at my time, and but I still have fun. And just for my running friends who listen to this show, and I know you do, the Millennium Running event called the Exclusive 5K, we're just wrapping those up. There were like six of them, I think. Really socially distanced, safe. It was kind of like starting, like going on a Southwest airline flight. You lined up, you were 6 feet apart from your next runner. They announced your name, you went off, and everything was based on your historical time. So if you were like the 10th runner, the nine people in front of you were people that generally are faster than you, and so it was very little passing. So it was really fun. So I'm glad I'm trying to get back into it. But as you know, Jeff, the main thing is just, you know, being out there one foot in front of the other. I do want to ask you one other thing, and then we'll get into today's topic. So you have worked probably for every newspaper here in New Hampshire, the Union Leader, the Concord Monitor, the National Telegraph, the Keene Sentinel, the Claremont Eagle Times, of course, and then you mentioned you founded the Hippo. In a nutshell, how do you see that media going forward? I mean, as you said, I mean, you have found the formula that works, kind of having the local cultural stuff. Others have a hybrid of the paper and the online. So what's in your crystal ball? How do you see things since you're probably the expert on this?
Well, I don't know about expertise, but I can say that I feel that we were going through this period of transition where it's going to take a while before people recognize the value that the local news product gives them in their communities. The New York Times is doing better than ever, and the Washington Post and some of these big national organizations, they're okay. But it's the local publications that used to be newspapers but now are often online as well that are having a real tough time making the business model work. And so there are fewer reporters, there are fewer photographers. The Nashua Telegraph, which is the paper I grew up reading and I worked for years and years ago, doesn't even print a paper anymore except on Sundays. And there's just a handful of people trying to put together local news for this huge community that's really not served by it the way it would have been long ago. And you like to think things get better with time, but boy, in my lifetime, the local news reporting has dwindled down to where it's just a shadow of what it would have been.
Yeah, and there's so much generic stuff. And that's actually the, you know, one of the reasons this radio program has worked so well is we have found, thanks to Binney Media, people do like the local material, the local angle. So we, more people listen, I think, to some of my radio shows on weekends and our own sort of, you know, official commercials and stuff. But any of it. But today's topic is on the Aviation Museum of New Hampshire, and the website there is nhahs.org. And of course, most people know if you listened to my show last year that it's located in the vintage 1937 passenger terminal at the Manchester-Boston Regional Airport. So you've been involved with the museum since 2018. So why don't you just tee it up, and we'll spend the whole last half of the show with the more details. How'd you get involved? And then I know, of course, because of COVID, you'll have to talk about what we're doing virtually. But tell us how you got involved.
Yeah, it does seem like kind of a real strange turn to go into the museum business after 35 years in publishing. But my father was an airline pilot for Northeast Airlines.
Oh, geez. North. I used to look the Yellow Birds, right?
Yes, he was a pilot for many years, World War II guy, and then was a commercial pilot. So aviation's always been kind of in the family tree, so to speak. I didn't pursue it, but I've always loved it and had a thing for it. And so after HIPPO became pretty well established, there's people there that really know what they're doing, and I felt it was a chance for me at this point in my life to devote myself to something that would be more of a challenge, you know, in the nonprofit area, to try and make a difference in an organization that could use some leadership and use some energy. And the Aviation Museum was looking for someone. At the same time, I decided I would like to go in that direction. And they had known me already because I've worked with them on things in the past. And it just seemed like a natural thing to do. So about 2 years ago, I signed on as the director. And we've had a great time kind of seeing what we can do with this quirky but really vital institution here at the airport. And it turns out there's a lot. And I'd love to talk more about
that. Sure, absolutely. The whole second half, we're going to focus on this. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio with you this weekend, August 15th and 16th. And this weekend with me is Executive Director of the Aviation Museum of New Hampshire, Jeff Rapsis, who in the first half of the show described his lengthy history in media and in silent film. But we're going to talk now for the next 12 minutes on the Aviation Museum's mission. And some other details. The mission is to preserve the past achievements of New Hampshire's aviation pioneers and to inspire today's youth to become tomorrow's aerospace innovators. So we know that the physical museum is located at the Manchester Regional Airport, but and as we talked at last year's show, you know, many high school students have come there. But in kind of this COVID world, tell us how you pivoted and have continued sort of this robust educational outreach in kind of this virtual world.
Sure, and that's really, I think, an important thing to remember. We are a museum, so we do have exhibits and old things. We have an archive and all of that, but it's really important to note that we're more of a learning center for young people where we try to, I think it's a common experience now for young kids to grow up and think nothing of stepping on a jet plane and going to Orlando, Florida or something. It's just part of what we do. But there's a certain magic to that that I hope we don't lose. That's something that kings and queens and pharaohs for thousands of years could only dream of, right? And we can just do it.
Right.
And I think nowadays, because you got to go through security and you got to take off your shoes and you got to put away your devices and there's, you know, it's we sort of squeeze the magic out of it. And, you know, it used to be years ago, young people would come to an airport and could walk right out on the ramp and talk with the pilots and sweep out the hangar and start bumming rides and get hooked on aviation. And you can't do that now. If you went out on the field, you'd get arrested, right?
Right. No, it's definitely changed from that perspective.
Yeah.
And before we get too far, I just want to remind people that they are a nonprofit, and so only 70% of about 70% of the income comes from donation and grants.
Yeah.
So it's important, if Jeff piques your interest, that we make some donations here. And again, the website is nhahs.org. So I like the way you just described that. I mean, so you've had, I know now probably with COVID this will change, but tell us how you've gotten, you know, the partnership with the Manchester School of Technology and some other things, you know, that you've done.
Yeah, well, there's two big components to education right now that the museum is doing. And the first one you just mentioned, we have a program where we're in partnership with the Manchester School of Technology, which is part of the Manchester School District. It's sort of the vocational high school. It's where the auto shop classes are and those sort of things. But we are doing something a little bit unusual. We're actually building an airplane, but actually it's the high school students that are building an actual airplane. It's an all-metal, two-seat light sport aircraft called an RV-12IS, and they're building it from scratch. It's in progress, and it's been going for the past year. They're doing it with the help of a team of volunteer mentors from our museum community. We have a lot of retired pilots and mechanics, and they're all over there helping the kids put this huge puzzle together that will result in an actual flying aircraft probably by the end of this school year coming up, so in the spring of 2021, if everything goes well. And then we're going to then sell the aircraft and use the funds to buy the next set of kits to build a second aircraft and so on. So we'll be creating an assembly line at the high school level, creating these planes, and it's a terrific hands-on experience for students in so many fields. They can learn about science and math and engineering in the classroom, but this is a chance for them to put all that to use and build a very complicated machine that has to be assembled to very precise specifications. So it's a terrific learning exercise. Even if someone doesn't go into aviation, this is something that it's sort of like the robotics program was about 15 years ago. There's no
sure.
reason schools can't do this.
And it's a sustainable project. And, of course, being a New Hampshire born and bred, you know, people love to hear it hasn't cost taxpayers a dime. They love hearing that. So when you've had to pivot with the recent school closures, tell us, I found this really cool, the Around the World Flight Adventure. Tell us about that.
Well, we for many years have had a program where we go into the schools, mostly middle schools, and speak directly with the students about the physics of flight or what it's like to be a pilot. It's a big part of what we do. Well, schools closed down in mid-March, and so did we. So that sort of put an end to our education program for a while anyway. But we didn't just accept that. We said, what can we do? Because schools are now in remote learning mode. What can we do to help that, to create a resource? We have a professional flight simulator right here at the museum, and we use it to kind of show guests what it's like. You can take off from the Manchester airport. It's configured to, it looks just like the Manchester airport. You take off and you can fly around southern New Hampshire. Sometimes we land in Concord. That's about as far as we ever went with it. But one of our volunteers, a retired naval aviator named Chuck Guerin, said, you know, we could fly that thing around the world if we wanted to. And that became the germ of an idea where we decided we would create an around-the-world flight adventure. It would be a virtual program that would take students from Manchester, New Hampshire. Starting on May 1st, we took off, and we've been flying one flight at a time all the way around the world ever since. So every 3 or 4 days, we fly from one place to another on the simulator, and it's all recorded on video. We edit it down. We create a lot of text to go with it and supporting links, and we post it on our website, and students and teachers can follow along. It can be just fun, but it can be also a terrific way to interest kids in not only the physics of flight, but geography and history and culture as we make our way around the globe. And so that has been a tremendous success. We didn't know what would happen when we did this. It was just kind of a shot in the dark, but it was instantly popular. We can tell from the downloads and from the traffic statistics. And then to our complete astonishment, on Memorial Day, on May 25th, we happened to be flying from London over to France. And we were going to go over the beaches of Normandy sort of as a way to pay tribute on Memorial Day to, you know, all the stuff that happened on D-Day. And I sent out a little press release to just the local media, and somehow Newsweek magazine found out about it and put us with as one of the top five ways to live stream Memorial Day in 2020.
Wow.
So we were right up there with Kathy Lee Gifford and the Grand Ole Opry.
Wow, that's terrific.
Yeah.
And here we are, you know, we're sitting here on August 15th, and basically, as we're doing this show, you may be returning from Thailand, and hopefully everything goes well. There'll be a ceremony, you know, later today. So that's terrific.
Yeah, on the August 15th. I know we're airing. Some people will hear us after that, but the virtual flight has been made in a DC-3. So it's not just any old aircraft, but we've been using a terrific old twin-engine airliner from the 1930s, like Indiana Jones might have been flying in the Raiders of the Lost Ark to make this flight as part of our, you know, historical bent here. And it's all been done virtually on our simulator, but for the arrival back to Manchester, we actually have a real DC-3 that we're going to bring in and fly in for
Wow.
the arrival ceremony, and we'll have a band, and we'll have some speeches and all that, because it's kind of a, you know, Return of the
Wow.
Conquering Heroes thing. And I guess looking forward, the thing is, we're with all schools considering remote learning for the next year as well, we are going to rerun the program and try and tweak it and improve it starting in the fall. So it gives everyone another bite at the apple to try and make use of this program.
Wow, that's so terrific, cool. Jeff. You're awesome. So with, we have a couple minutes remaining. We did, back to sort of the physical, we did reopen on July 18th with
yeah.
Look But Don't Touch exhibits. So that must have taken a lot of planning. Tell us briefly how that worked.
Well, like all museums, we had to work with the governor's office to come up with a plan that was, would allow us to open safely under the whole COVID-19 era that we're living through. Unfortunately, the Aviation Museum for years had emphasized hands-on exhibits, so kids come in and can, you know, work with their hands on things. We had a whole children's play area full of Legos, build your own airport. We have a cockpit that the kids can sit in and pretend to be pilots. We have a virtual reality exhibit where they put on these goggles. All of that had to be removed because it would be a breeding ground, it was felt, for COVID-19. And we had to change everything. And it took us a month and a half, but we came up with other exhibits from our archives and from other sources. And we've remade the museum into more of a, it's more of a take a tour through and look at things. Rather than hands-on, but it's a, I think it's a terrific way to spend an afternoon, especially if you have kids in your family that like airplanes, because there's
Wow.
nothing like what we have in here that you'll find anywhere. And then we're right next to the busiest runway of the Manchester Airport, so if what's inside our museum doesn't excite and thrill you, what's outside on the runway I think really will, because you know,
well,
you can't get
well, I'll tell you, Brian, a big smile to my face, because there's being on the State Board of Education for many years and chairman for several years. I mean, real world learning is where it's at. So I really am grateful that with how creative you are. And so for my listening audience, I'm sure Jeff has inspired you. As a reminder, the Aviation Museum of New Hampshire is physically located at the Manchester Regional Airport. They are a not-for-profit, and only a small portion of the revenues are from ticket sales. So if you have it, you have the means, please consider a donation. The website is nhahs.org. And I also know that as a volunteer organization, that Jeff would certainly, you know, welcome any volunteers as well. And thanks again for all of the work you've done to keep it alive and pivoting in this COVID world that we're living with, and still being, you know, a role model for students. And thank you, Jeff, for being a true jewel in New Hampshire in many respects, both in media and what you're currently now doing with the Aviation Museum. And again, the website is nhahs.org. Thank you, Jeff.
Well, thanks for the kind words, and thanks for all that you do and that Northeast Delta Dental does to support the community as well.